Oh, hello, everyone, and welcome back to another very exciting session of the Group Golf Therapy Podcast. My name is Drew Westfall. I'm one of the co-hosts, along with my good friends, Connor Laubenstein and Bradford Wilson. Welcome back to Season 5. I can't believe it. I can't believe we made it to Season 5. We had an amazing episode with Michael Block to kick off the season, and we got that energy going just as strong with our second episode of Season 5. We have one of my favorite people in the golf space, Shane Bacon. Shane is he's a true golf sicko, and I mean that in one of the most loving ways that you can say about somebody. Shane, every part of every facet, every aspect of his life encompasses the game of golf. He is a national broadcaster. He has a podcast. He has multiple golf podcasts. He's a published author. He's written a children's book. He's written millions of articles that you've seen all over, from back in the blog days to coverage on every single golf publication. Golf is just truly a part of his life. And then even more recently, Shane qualified for the U.S. Amateur this past year, and he played in that out in Colorado. We get to talk about all of those things and many more. Parenthood, how his mental game has changed over the past year, and it's brought him some of his best golf of his life. Sit back, enjoy, listen to Shane and us chop it up for about an hour. Thank you, guys. And remember, hit 'em straight and mind your golf.
There's another side to good health. That's good mental health.
Well, Shane, we're excited to have you on the Group Golf Therapy Podcast, affectionately the mental health podcast that masquerades as a golf podcast. And you, of all people, are probably one of the biggest, and I say this lovingly, the biggest golf sickos we've ever had on the show. Golf is a part of your life in at least forward facing, outward facing, in every facet of your life, and how it shows up, which is really cool and unique, and we're excited to pick at that a little bit more. So yeah, thanks for joining us.
Beautiful brain of yours.
Yeah,
that's either a compliment or not. I don't know which way to go with it. I'll take it as a compliment. It's funny. I've tried professionally to push away at times from golf. You know, it's like you fall in love with something. It's like, okay, can I do this elsewhere? And then you always come back to it. And I remember like hosting some college basketball games at Fox and doing some NFL sideline there and college football and stuff like that. And then, you know, you end up doing, you know, 40 golf events in between them. And it's like, no, I think golf's going to be the thing. I think this is it.
When do you think you knew that? How old were you? Where were you in life that you were like, actually, no, I want to make the thing I love my career?
Yeah, I got out of college and I worked at a golf course I worked like outside service at a golf course because I was trying to play. So I tried to play professionally. I learned pretty quick I wasn't going to make it doing that. I mean, this was like 06, 07, very competitive time of mini tour golf before 08, where when everything crashed, mini tour golf actually got less competitive because there weren't as many people donating. I was one of those donators, right? I mean, if you're not making money, you're in essence donating. You'd learn you're on like the wrong side of the draw. All the good players would play the other course first and you'd play the second course, you know, and it's like, I know where I stack up. When I decided to give up trying to play pro, I broke up with my girlfriend, moved to Denver and took like a real job. So this was like nothing to do with golf. I was in an office and one of my buddies sent me a note one day. He's like, why are you not writing about golf? Like, you did this in college. You need to get back to it. And I started blogging about golf, and I would do that like 90% of the time I was at work. I would definitely not do the job I was being asked to do and being paid to do. And this was like early blog days where you'd write, you know, 15 articles a day. And I think it was probably in that time that I thought, this is probably what I should at least pursue, because I was passionate about it and I was excited about it. And I didn't care about the job I had. I mean, I appreciated it, but I didn't care about the business. I mean, it was dealing with oil, and I mean, I didn't know anything about it. I was completely clueless about the business and also wasn't passionate about researching it. You know, when I got off work, it wasn't like I was going home digging deep into like archival information about it. So right, I think it was probably around then. Yeah. What do I need to know? You know, like, what are we cleaning today? Like, where are these tankers in, you know, Lafayette? And so it was probably then I realized that it would be a sport I'd pursue. But I mean, it'd probably be 10 years later that I really understood. I was writing about it. I was getting paid to write about it. And then some TV jobs came calling. And when that happened, I remember I went on two interviews on the same trip to two different golf networks, basically. And it was like, I flew to Connecticut, I flew to Florida. And it's like, okay, if I'm going to do writing and TV, then I'm probably going to be all in on the sport, you know, for the foreseeable. So probably two moments really in my life.
I love that. I think that's, I think everyone kind of comes to that crossroads in their life, whether it's, thankfully for you, it was early on, and some of us come to it later in life, but that's beautiful. It's always great to find your passion and almost like a calling to something. And it somehow always brings you back, for sure. It did for Bradford and I and Connor. And that's why we're doing this now.
Yeah. I mean, it's such, you know, I think what's so cool about golf, that's so unique about this sport versus all the other ones, because I mean, I'm a nut. Like, I watch everything. I mean, I've been watching, you know, every U.S. Open match basically on TV. I was like, I'm not going to watch Clemson Duke last night. And of course, I'm like watching my iPad in bed as I'm like going to sleep. Yep. Like, I can't get away from this stuff. But what is so different about golf is there's so much business around the sport because everybody's invested in playing, no matter what age you're into it. And because of that, there's so much opportunity in the media space. You know, if you're a college football broadcaster or writer, if you're covering college football, you're covering the professional side of it, and that's it. You know, I mean, Joel Klatt, who's one of my good buddies, you know, he does a great job of finding small business opportunities within the sport. I know, you know, he's got that great video series he just put out where he's interviewing coaches, but it's still college football, right? It's still talking about the professional side of it. And what I find just so incredible about golf in general is, you know, you can watch No Laying Up's Tour of Sauce, and it has nothing to do with pro golf, and you can be invested in it. You can watch Bob Does Sports and not care about what Victor Hovland's doing or who got picked on the Ryder Cup. You know, I just, there's so much beauty in the avenues throughout the sport, what you guys do. I mean, it's golf, and at times it's golf adjacent, but this would be a hard thing to do if it was NFL, you know, because it would be hard to find the roads in that sport, and golf allows that. And so, you know, as frustrating as it can be and as weird as it can be at times, it gives us so many different avenues. And I just don't, it's almost like the heart, right? I mean, like, all these arteries are kind of going into it, and golf in the middle of it is the main part of that. But you can come into it 30 different ways and still find a love that a person that's coming into it on a totally different route is invested into it as well.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think that's one of the things that gives us the most pride about the show. Like, we found our own inroad based on passions we already had, things that were a part of our own lives, what we were experiencing at the time. And fortunately, golfers are so unique and varied that eventually we find people that can understand the language we speak on this show. Like, when we tell somebody this is a mental health show masquerading as a golf show, that could either really be off-putting or,
right,
yo, let me find out what that's about. So I guess, like, one of our favorite questions to kind of kick that conversation off is, like, how is mental health and golf intertwined in your life? Like, where do you find yourself finding little bits of either a release or, you know, clarity on the course? How does that show up for you now? I mean, as a professional in the golf industry, I imagine you play a lot, right? Like, you still play on the professional level. But where are those times on the course where you kind of have a moment to yourself, a moment of clarity? And how's that show up for you?
Yeah, honestly, Bradford, it's a great question. It's an interesting question, because for me, I think this is one of the first years that I've really understood the balance. I'm 39 years old, doing it for a long time. The balance was always hard for me. You know, I would be on the road for 6 or 7 days or be on the road for 2 weeks, come home, and the connection to my pals or the connection to this world that I was in was golf, right? Hey, are we going to go play golf this day? And I'd be out on the golf course on the fourth or fifth hole, and I wouldn't be there. You know, I would be really struggling because I was spending so much of my work time, if you will, covering golf, talking about golf, focusing on golf, finding angles or whatever the case may be at a championship or USGA event to talk about the sport. Then I'd come home and do it as well, you know, and I didn't find that extremely healthy for me mentally. I would get exhausted with the sport. And then I went a route where I would just not play any golf. So then I would come home and totally disconnect from it. That wasn't good either, you know. So this year, I've got two kids. I'm a member at a country club up here in Connecticut. I am on the road a decent amount. When I come home, my first thing is family, right? So I'm giving the wife a break. I'm spending time with the kiddos. We're doing things the kids want to do. Neither of my kids are that interested in golf right now at this point, except for Henry now likes to go to the golf course and drive around in the golf cart and do things like that. So that's fun for him and also fun for me because I can hit a shot here or there. But my number one thing is, okay, did I check the box of spending time with my family, making sure my wife is also okay mentally because she just spent 7 or 8 days with two little kids and that's hard on her. And then once that's all checked, okay, what day after I talk to Cindy, what day are you cool if I go out and play golf? Is this the easiest time? The other thing I've realized is like timing for my golf, like play early, play late, don't play in the middle of the day because that basically just ruins your entire day. But this year I've really leaned into the release of going out and playing. So when I go play, put the phone in the bag or put it in the golf cart and really try not to check it. You know, one of the things I'm terrible about, which is a good thing, is if I'm having a good round or if I'm having a lot of fun on the golf course, I don't have any pictures or videos from the round, when you're supposed to, in our world, when you're supposed to post these things online and you have no evidence of playing golf, that's also not a good thing. But for me, it's always a good indication I had an awesome day playing golf is if I don't have single evidence from the round. Yep. And so that's been a balance that I think I've struck where I'm not spending much time practicing because I just don't have that amount of time in my life right now to go spend. It takes me 25 minutes to do the course. I'm going to spend 2 hours hitting balls. You know, it's 30 minutes home. That's 3 hours that I could be spending doing other things that would be better either for me, my mental health, or my family. And so practicing isn't really a thing I do that much now, but going and playing, I can kind of check out of everything and allow myself to really dive deep into the round of golf. And when I've done that this year, I've really enjoyed myself when I am off the road back home playing. But it's, again, if you're going to the golf course and you're thinking about finishing, that's not a good thing. So I've just really had to remind myself that if you're going to go play, enjoy these 5 hours with the friends you're playing with. And when you're done with that, you can go through everything you need to go through either on your phone or in your life. And when you get home, send Cindy on her way. Hey, what do you want to go do? You want to go to the gym? You want to get out of here? You want to go meet some friends for happy hour? Like, whatever the case may be where you're also getting that break takes a little bit of the pressure off me because golf can make parents feel guilty, you know, and it's hard to, I've talked to a lot of friends of mine where golfing as a parent, you really, really struggle with the guilt of that because it's 6 hours of your day if you have to drive to the course and finding those releases on the back end where the partner or whomever can feel that freedom as well makes that guilt for me at least go away a bit.
Yeah. No, that's so true. Golf becomes a different part of your life once you become a parent. I also have two kids, two little kids, so it's always the
Drew, how old are your kids?
5.5 and 2.5. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're you're just ahead of me. I mean, you're literally like a year ahead on both sides. Yeah. Bradford, you got kids yet?
None yet.
Okay.
He's got a dog.
Play a lot of golf.
I got a dog. Yeah. But this is like one of my favorite parts of the show is when we can talk to parents and Drew usually, you know, gets right in there with his own experiences as a parent, but something you said about, you know, golf making you feel guilty at times. We'll love to see y'all like unpack that a bit.
Well, I mean, I think Shane did a great summary. It's like when you have kids and you want to spend time with them, you already have limited time, or at least I'll speak for myself. I have limited time with my kids. They go to daycare and school now, and you know, nights and weekends are kind of the family time. That's the time you want to spend with them, and you know, you only get so many so many hours and days with your kids, you know, this this intimately before they're off and, you know, playing sports, going to friends' houses, going off to college. So for now, it's like we really try to cherish all the time we do have together. So like Shane said, it's like on a Saturday morning, if someone's like, hey, I've got a 10 o'clock tea time, I'm like, I'm not going to be back until 3. And that's the entire Saturday of when they're awake and doing things and not grumpy. So, you know, if I can get out at 6 o'clock, that might be more doable, 6 a.m. on a Saturday, because then I might be back by lunchtime. But yeah, it's, you know, there's so much. Unfortunately, there's a lot of guilt associated with playing golf, because you really miss out on or you might you feel like you're missing out on time with them. And you know, thankfully, I also have a really supportive wife and partner that allows me to spend time away. And she knows that we all need to do that. She needs to get away. I need to get away. But for me, yeah, you got to pick your battles of when you play and how long you play.
Drew, the interesting part about the supportive partner, you know, I mean, my wife's the same way. And I always will, you know, I always ask, like, hey, are you cool if I play Friday or Saturday or whatever, even though I know she's going to be okay with it. It's the times where she goes, we have this, or no. Yeah. And when you hear that, it's like, okay, like, you never say that. So that's totally fair. Like, this round isn't going to change my life. No. I turned down a round on Friday at a bucket list golf course that, you know, is a place I've played it before, but it's like one of the great golf courses in the country, because I'd been on the road. I'd played a couple days earlier in the week. It's like, I don't want to chance this, you know? I mean, it's like, I mean, you know, you're rolling Wheel of Fortune. It's like, I got a lot of money here. I could probably solve the puzzle. Like, I don't need the R for, you know, another $1,000, right?
Yeah. So yeah, sometimes you might be flying too close to the sun or skating on thin ice, but yeah, it's absolutely a balance. I think, yeah, going into, you know, how golf shows up in your life, you wrote a children's book, Shane. That's that is golf focused, The Golfer Zoo, which I is amazing. It's incredible. How did that come about and where did that come from?
Drew, being in the golf space, as you know this, Bradford, I'm sure you know this as well. You get a lot of golf stuff in the mail, which is awesome. It's a great part of our job. I mean, it's like one of my favorite parts of getting packages in the mail of, you know, new hats. You guys send me a hat. I love it. I wear it all the time. I didn't get many golf books when we had our first kid. And I was a bit shocked by that. We got this alphabet book that's out there. I'm sure you have that, Drew. And it kind of goes through different players in the game. And I have it. I have the NBA version as well. And so I did a bit of research, and there weren't a lot of children's golf books out there. And I mentioned Joel Klatt earlier. I remember I called Joel one time. He has three boys and they're older than my kids. And I remember I called Joel and I said, how did you get the boys into golf? And he said, I take them out to the golf course and we play one hole for dad. So that's golf, right? I mean, you're hitting shots and dad's holing out.
That's golf.
And then that's real golf. And then you play one hole for the kids. And it's what the kids want to do. Is this playing in the bunker? Is this throwing rocks in the water?
Yeah.
And he mentioned animals. Let's go look at the turtles. Let's go look at the fish. And for whatever reason, that always kind of lingered in my brain. Mm. And I started to kind of think about the golf course as a zoo. Same thing for my son. I mean, as Henry got a little bit older and started to understand things, I'd be on a golf course in Florida, for instance, and see an alligator. And I would take a picture of that alligator and text it to my wife and say, show Henry. Or up here in the Northeast, you see these big turkeys all the time. It's like, hey, I did this the other day. Take a picture of five turkeys on the golf course and show Henry. And then I'll get home and he'll go, Dad, show me the turkey pick, right? I mean, that's like a connection to the golf course, even though he doesn't quite care about the game yet. And so that's kind of where it all originated from, was the golf course as this zoo. And I linked up with my buddy at the Back Nine Press and said, would you ever be interested in a children's book? And he'd never done one before. And, you know, it went through some iterations and we found an artist. And yeah, it was rarely is an idea actually come to life and maybe exceed your expectations. And I think Eviel, who did the illustrations, like exceeded my expectations of what I hoped it would look like. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, really proud of it. It's all, you know, Henry and Joel and Joel's kind of advice to me about parenting, but yeah, that's kind of where the idea came from.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think that being able to, you know, I've been reading a lot of children's books, thousands of children's books over the past 5 years. And the one thing that I have learned is that like, one, literally anyone can be an author, and there are some like really bad children's books, like, just they're not good, and those are the ones that my kids seem to gravitate towards that we have to keep reading. But yeah, I think.
Drew, do you hide those? Because I've been doing that.
I mean, we have to.
I can't find.
I don't know
find
where that
it.
One is. I'm sorry, buddy. Yeah, sorry. We took Bummer. It back to the library. We gave it to another kid. No, yeah, I agree. There are those moments that we have to do that. Thankfully, but no, I think that. Yeah, I was thankful to see a golf book because you're right. There is it is kind of a desert for children's books, which is surprising because there's so golf can affect you in so many more ways than like we talked about other sports that you would have thought. Anyone wrote something about golf. So yeah, thank you for giving us that the golfer zoo.
Yeah, I think I think Michelle Wee West is working on one or has finished one, and I know Paige Sporanek and her sister are actually publishing a children's golf book with Back Nine Press. So there are a few more kind of coming down the pipeline. But
that's cool.
Yeah, just throwing that out there was a lot of fun for sure.
That's so cool. We're talking to another children's book author this week, Mia Baker, based in the UK. Her approach was a little bit different, I believe. I mean, she'll tell us the origin and everything. But to hear that there are others on the way is really exciting. And like what a great gift to the golf community. We were talking to Michael Block last week and something about how you were explaining the relationship between you and your wife and your kids and how it kind of frees you up to enjoy yourself when you're there for those 5 hours. Something that he shared with us was his mantra, like, do everything I can to make the hole look bigger. Like, if I'm going to the course knowing that this is going to cause a hardship at home, I'm making the hole smaller. But if me and my partner are like, yes, this is an appointed time where you can get out there, you can really enjoy yourself, that frees you up to throw the phone on do not disturb, throw it in the bag, and go and enjoy yourself for those 5 hours and make the hole bigger. And I'm going to tell you, that changed my whole perspective on like how I manage my time ahead of a round of golf. Like, I just thought that was so brilliant. And it sounds like you're doing a version of that yourself.
You know, it's interesting in a way. Yeah, Bradford. I mean, I think for me, you like, I do this with travel. I don't know how you guys are with this, but flying. Okay. I fly a lot. I wanted to be the guy that could show up to the airport an hour before his flight and be happy with it. But that's just not me. Like, it's too much stress
anymore.
It doesn't work well for me. And now I'm like, you know what, man, I'm going to show up 90 minutes before and it's going to be fine if I sit and buy a coffee or have something to eat or get some snacks or whatever the case may be. Why add the stress when I don't need it? Same thing for golf. Like, I know now that I've got to hit golf balls before the round. Like, I really want to hit a few. I want to make a few swings. I want to see one driver in the air. I want to roll a couple of putts. Like, why make the hole smaller by showing up to the golf course when you know that your mind – is not great when you haven't gone through your process, right? So I love that. I mean, I love the idea of making sure, is home okay? Is everybody good? Is there anything you need me to do? And let's make sure I leave the house to go to the golf course with enough time to where when I show up, I'm not running through all the things I need to run through and I'm not prepped on the first hole to actually have a good round. Because again, in my life now at home, maybe I'm playing once a week. And so if I'm playing once a week and I go out there and play bad because I was 3 over through 4 because I didn't do all the stuff I needed to do to make the hole bigger to start, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Which is like the complete opposite from what I would say like 95% of the golfing world do, which
of
is
course.
Show up 10 minutes before the tee time, slap your credit card down at the pro shop, run out to the first tee, your group is already waiting for you, and block one into the trees.
Yeah. That's me. Shane, one thing that I've been dying to talk to you about is the US Open, or the US Amateur, I should say, which you competed in this year. And now I'm starting to see some ties to you talking about how golf is showing up in your life the best as it has in your adult life. And do you feel like there's ties to your performance, which led you to qualifying for this year's USAM, and yeah, let's unpack all of that.
Drew, I mean, it kind of going back to mentally feeling the best I've ever felt on the golf course. I'm 39. I can still play. I can still play competitive golf. I wasn't playing up to my potential last year. I missed everything by one shot. Like every cut, every qualifier, everything was a one shot miss. And I mean, I've read Bob Rotella's book. Once that starts to happen, it's not a coincidence. Like there's a reason that you're missing everything by one. And I went into it this year just telling myself that, you know, we live on a stage where whatever you do on the golf course is going to be seen by more people than your friends and family. And that is something that I've carried for a long time. Like I know if I sign up for a qualifier, if I know I play in a state open or a state AM, people on Twitter, people on Instagram are going to know how you played. And, you know, there are going to be people that chirp you, and it's part of the job and it's part of the business. I went into this year because I was so frustrated last year. I went into it this year saying I'm playing X amount of competitive events. Every event you play, go into it, A, as Block said, giving yourself the best chance of making the hole bigger, but B, go try to play aggressive, smart golf. And I know those two things don't typically link together, but my point is go into it and be aggressive when you can be aggressive and play smart when you need to play smart, because I would always pick one or the other. I'd go into a qualifier and go, I'm going to play safe golf all day, smart golf. I hit iron off every tee and I might need a birdie late on a par five. And then I got to hit driver. You had to hit a driver all day. Right. So I went into this year with a completely different mindset of the way I'd play competitive golf. And this has without a doubt been my best competitive year probably in my life. I mean, I played the Ike, which is a Met major, if you will, qualified for that on the number, got into it. It was at my course. I shot 66 in the final round to finish in the top 10. That was huge because I hadn't seen that number in a long time in a tournament. And then kind of leaning into the amateur, I was battling with the guy I was playing with late. This kid named AJ we met, and he was awesome. Yes, of course, there is a relation to Francis we met. And we were kind of battling late in the day because there was two spots and one kid already had locked one up because he shot 66. And I birdied my last two holes to beat him by one. And again, it was like it was allowing yourself to hit the shots you know you're capable of hitting and almost not getting in your own way. And, you know, just last week, I mean, I played great in the Connecticut mid-am and finished third and finished behind the two best, you know, mid-amateurs in the state of Connecticut. So to finish in that position was good. And it's all made me hungrier to do it more. And the U.S. amateur, I mean, I was pretty much resigned to the fact that I'd never play in that before. I mean, I do the qualifier for fun. I remember years ago, Max Homa caddied for me in a U.S. amateur qualifier in Arizona that was 2 days because it was too hot. And after the first day, he's like, you're good tomorrow, right? I was like, yeah, I got it. You don't have to come out tomorrow. It's fine. It's a long drive from Central Scottsdale. But, I mean, I didn't think I'd ever make one. And the mental switch this year, allowing myself to at least free the brain up enough to go play the golf you know you're capable of playing, led me into that. Now, I didn't play well at the amateur. It was a bit frustrating to not play great golf there. But you also have to understand your expectations, right? I made it to the oldest championship in our sport and the biggest amateur event in the world. Play well or play poorly, it was going to be a great week. And I did not leave Denver Airport frustrated. I had frustrations on the golf course. I had moments where I was like, why didn't you commit more to the golf shot you were trying to pull off? But that experience will be one I remember for a long time, just because, again, it's proven to me that the mental shift in the way I approach the game worked. And the stuff I'm doing mentally to lead into these rounds of golf is working. And it's made me hungry for next year. Like, I'm looking at next year going, qualify for the AM again. Like, now you'll have one under your belt and let's see what you can go do, because I feel like the nerves will be less. I was nervous as hell on that first tee. Yeah, let me tell you guys, like, I hit in the fairway. I was like, man, that thing could have gone anywhere, you know?
I think that's a through line from Connor, Brad, and myself, is how the mental game affects your physical attributes and how you add and how golf like shows up when you're playing it. And I mean, I can say the same myself. I'm 35 going on 36 and I'm playing the best golf that I've ever played in my life. And I haven't necessarily changed anything about, you know, my physical being. I'm not healthier or more in shape than I was when I was 18 or 19 playing really good golf in college. But the mental side of the game is so much different now. And I've approached golf and come back to golf in a different way. And I think that's something that we're trying to show the world too, is like, you know, golf can be what it's going to be for you individually. Like there's no right or wrong way that golf can show up in your life. Golf is a part of all three of our lives very differently, but also the same. And that's okay. Like it's not like your way is better, my way is better. It's not like there's the right or wrong way. You could love watching the PGA Tour or live, or you could be just a guy that wants to go out and play on Saturday with your friends and you don't even care about watching professional golf. And that's okay too. But if you can make that time more enjoyable due to how you approach the game or how you approach each shot or how you approach your preparation, you know, that brings joy to our hearts, knowing that, you know, maybe we had a really small part in that.
It's a really hard sport. It's very, very hard all the time. And I mean, you look at guys like Justin Thomas, and I mean, this is legitimately one of maybe the top five most talented guys in the world at our sport,
right,
who can't break 80 in a major right now. I mean, it is wild to feel those lulls, and we've all felt them before. And then when you are riding the high, and right now I'm riding a high with my golf game, it's important to just simply enjoy the moment when it's happening. You're playing a great round of golf. You're having your best nine holes ever. Even on a run of three holes, you've gone, you know, you're a 15 handicap and you just went par, par, birdie. Not stressing about the next hole, just almost enjoying those three holes for what they were. I've had those moments, like, you know, I mean, what is on the in Tin Cup, where he's like, you ride until he bucks you, right? It's like, enjoy the ride, right? Because you're just trying to make it 8 seconds. And in golf, like, I'm trying to make it 8 seconds. I've compartmentalized rounds of golf too this year. I've tried to go, like, if I know the course well, one of the things about me is I never play practice rounds. So almost all these golf tournaments, I'm like, don't know what this hole does. Hope I got it figured out.
That's
right?
So funny.
I just hope again, it opens going, up going back here. To the time. Oh, Bradford, I in the mid AM. The mid AM is this week. It's sleepy, and I'm so bombed. I played awful out of the gate in the qualifier, and then ended up missing by a couple shots. But I hit it left of the world on 10, thinking it was a good line. And the guy I'm playing with played the course for, and I was like, "Is that okay?" And he was just looked at me like,
"Yeah, where are you going? No. It's going right, not left. Yeah.
Are you asking me? That is awful." And I was like, "Well, that would have been a good one to play." But if I know the golf course, I will try to mentally compartmentalize the holes. Like, this is a tough three-hole stretch. If you play this three-hole stretch one over, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Bogeys are okay. Try not to make a double. Try not to bogey a par five. Almost those old Tiger rules. But it's like, it's making golf shorter, because 18 holes can seem like a lot. 9 holes can seem like a lot. But for me, if I can almost shorten the round of golf, it has helped me at least try to accomplish the things I'm trying to accomplish within a round.
I forget who we're talking to that breaks the round down in 3-hole stretches like that. But that's a tool, you know, that's a tool for like self-regulation and expectation setting, which I guess leads me to my next question, is like, when you're in those moments where you have to talk to yourself, whether it's to bring yourself down or, oh, I love this hole, like, let's go. You know, what are some of those tools that you use or, you know, that self-talk that you use before a big hole, a big round, a time that requires like your focus.
Yeah. You know, my buddy Joel Beal, who, you know, does a great job at Golf Digest. He told me, and he's really good. He played a lot of competitive golf early in his life. He told me the more nervous he got, he would try to swing slower on the backswing. He would say if he had a nervous golf shot, he would say, I'm going to try to swing as slow as I can on the backswing. I've been using that a lot lately, which is nice. But I'll try to singularly focus on a target. So if it's a nervy shot, if it's a really tight hole, if it's late in a round, for instance, at the US Amateur Qualifier, it was 36 holes in the same day. It was at this course in Westchester. And on 17 in the first rounds of par five, I pull hooked my tee shot in the crap. It was an awful golf shot. We ended up finding it. And I pitched out and made par. But, you know, I mean, those things linger, right? I mean, those ideas or the bad swings linger. I will just, like, picture one thing on the golf hole that I can think about when I'm standing over the ball. And there happened to be a tree out in the distance. and I will just really think about the tree. Like when I'm standing over the ball, just like that, you know, that tree, you're lined up to the tree, hit it at the tree. And so I'm trying to just simplify everything that I can possibly be thinking about into one or two things. And if that's, you know, take away and basically swing, or if that's, you know, if that's just a focus of what your target may be, that's helpful for me. Or, you know, same thing with a putt. I have a stressful putt on like 18. I'll go, okay, there's a mark 6 inches in front of your ball. If you roll it over that mark, which is on your line, it's going to have a pretty good chance of going in.
It's going in.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, it's like, if you, I mean, can you hit a putt and hit a mark 6 inches out? Yeah, most people can do that. So just try to do that. And it's like, then let everything else happen, right?
Yeah. That reminds me of one of our meat potato questions we usually save toward the end of the episode. But what is your golf toxic trait? I'll give you an example. It's similar to what you said over this putt. When I step up to a par three, I'm like, oh, this is going in. Like, this is a one. Like, the hole is 152 yards away. Like, this is going in the hole. So do you have a golf toxic trait, and what is it?
Mine would always be like, and again, gotten a lot better at this lately, but mine would always be, it's like, I have a 7 iron from 185. The hole's on the right side. I'm a lefty golfer. The hole's on the right side. I'm going to aim at the middle of the green and try to draw it. And getting into the shot thinking about left, that would be like my toxic trait, is it's left shouldn't even be in your brain, because in theory, you're going to hit a ball straight. You're going to turn it over. Maybe even you overhook it and you hit it right. But left is not, left's not on the radar. So like eliminating that thought, but there'd be times where I'm sitting over the golf shot, getting into it, going, what's left if you like block this, or, you know, double cross it? It's like, stop thinking about it. Like, don't care
about
it.
Right.
You know, like think target, think shot shape, but like, don't think about the shot you're not even trying to hit, because now all of a sudden you're going to be, you know, octopus arms. You got no chance here.
Right. It's like your brain doesn't compute the word no. It's just like,
exactly.
What am I going to do? What am I about to do?
Yeah.
Do that thing.
Don't. Left is isn't on this planet right now.
Like, right. We can't even do that. Yeah.
There's no such direction.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Can't turn left.
I think that's, I love that in golf too, because I think so many people, a lot of amateurs, especially newer golfers or, you know, maybe higher handicap players, their first thought is what not to do. It's like, I don't want to chunk it. I don't want to top it. I don't want to shank it. And for me, I'm always just like, hey, just focus on what you're trying to do. Don't focus on, because we can all, you know, we can, there's a lot of noise and there's a lot of things that we can think about over a golf shot. And for people that are, you know, maybe not as good, or they haven't played as much, or they don't have as much experience, if your last thought is, I don't want to chunk it, I mean, that's, you're telling your body what to do already. So if we can,
two plus two is four, if we can get into a mindset
of just like, hey, I'm going to peer this one. I'm not saying you're going to do it, but at least if that's your last swing thought, you know, that's what I try to tell my friends, because, you know, they're like, oh, like, I'm, you know, I'm going to hit it in the trees. It's like, well, now you told your body what to do, and now that's what's going to happen. So let's keep the positive vibes. Yeah. And I know it sounds simple to do, but I found that it helps me. And I feel like a lot of the really top players in the world, they're not thinking of what they're not going to do. They're thinking, you know, at Sawgrass, they're not thinking about the water. They're just like, hey, I'm 123 away. There's nothing else I'm thinking about.
Hit it 125. It's a bucket. Fine. I mean,
yeah, it's exactly a bucket. Right. It's going in.
Totally. It's it's interesting you bring up that too. You know, I think it's G4 or somebody like that does the no one cares what you shot, you know, mantra that popped up a few years ago. I also think that's something golfers, and I struggle with this as well, is you heard me say it earlier. It's like, you shoot a bad score, people might chirp you. It's like, people don't really care. You know, like even my wife, I mean, who like loves me and I love her and she's awesome. And she's an enormous supporter of what I do, both playing professionally, whatever the case may be. Right. Like if I play terrible, she does not care. If I play great, she also doesn't really care. And when you hit a bad shot on a golf course and you think it's embarrassing, or you think everybody around you might, you know, judge you for the swing you made off the first tee, there's a lot of people standing there. I remember I was playing Bannon Trails years ago, or no, we were playing Pacific at Bannon Dunes years ago. It was me and my buddy Andrew, And it was just him and I were playing an afternoon at match at Pacific. And I was like, let's go play the back tee. So there's a tee box that's like right where people are eating lunch. And he's like, I don't know if I want to go back there. I was like, yo, these people will see you hit this shot, whether it's great or bad, and never think about it again.
They're going to take another bite of their sandwich.
Ever think about it again. They might laugh. If you hit an awful shot, they might laugh about it for 10 minutes. But they're never going to see you and go, that's the dude that snap hooked it off one. You know, even your friends. Like, you might get a chuckle out of bad golf shots with your buddies, but nobody really cares. They're out there trying to enjoy themselves and play their own game. And I think when you can step out of that, I struggle with that at the amateur. Personally, I struggle with that at the amateur because, again, once it started to go south, all you're doing is trying to save it. You're not trying to play great. You're not trying to go out there and make birdies. It's like trying to save a round of golf. And it was a good reminder once I finished that, like, what'd you do bad this week? And it was, I reminded myself that I maybe allowed the forces that had nothing to do with the way you were playing to creep in a bit once you started to play poorly. It's like, if I asked anybody in the world right now what I shot at the amateur, there's no chance anybody would know, right? Did you make the cut? Did you miss the cut?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Yep. That's about it, right?
Yeah, we talk about that actually all the time too, of like no one else caring about your golf shot, whether it's good or bad. You know, maybe the only golf shot that I could think of it that someone would actually think about later on is a hole in one, you know, albatross, you dunked one on a par five or something. But other than that, it's like, you know, or if you topped one and it went, you know, 1 yard or something in front of a group of people, we might talk about that one. But yeah, as far as just golf, you know, we all hit so many good and bad ones that if you can just take that out of your mindset of no one cares about your swing, they're just thinking about the one that they're going to top or not top or shank into the woods. So they're not thinking about we're not thinking about you guys and the rest of the group. So that's
I'm thinking about that move.
Drew, I think I think about this with like my kids a lot, where like I think my kids are beautiful and super cute and I love them and everything they do. Not everything they do. I mean, they can be annoying at times, but everything they do for the most part is I find very precious and cute. My daughter's 1.5 right now. Like everything she does, I melt over, you know? And it's like, I know most people in this world don't care about my kids. And when I say most people, I mean, even my friends, like they want me to be happy and they want my kids to be happy and healthy, but they kind of care about their world.
Yeah.
They care about their kids. Like, my mom, my dad, Cindy's parents, my sister, like there might be 15 people on planet Earth that truly care about the super cute stuff my kids do. And understanding that, where it's like, I'm not flooding my Instagram timeline with like cute videos of Charlotte, because again, I can send that to Cindy and she'd be like, oh my God, like that is so freaking cute. Like we ate ice cream last night and Charlotte had chocolate all around her mouth. And I took this great picture and she kind of looks like this porcelain doll. You're like, that was a great pick.
Yeah.
I'll send it to my mom. It's the same thing about golf, right? It's like even your really close friends don't really care about your golf game. One of my buddies, you said the hole-in-one thing. Like one of my friends always jokes about the hole-in-one. The worst part about making a hole-in-one is telling people about it because they're just waiting for you to finish so they can tell you their hole-in-one story. It's like we're pretty self-consumed for the most part anyway. It's just like just try to remember that in life in general. It's like most of the stuff you're doing is self-contained to about 8 to 10 people. And outside of that, it's like everybody's just going along with their own
game. And for golf game, it's even a smaller circle. Like I said, it's probably just you. Like it's the
for
same
sure.
thing. Like
it's you and maybe your best
maybe,
friend.
Yeah. Right. Like we obviously have a group chat of the three of us, Connor not here, but we talk about golf, but other than that, even my friends that are, my friends that I see every day, they don't care. My wife doesn't. My wife actively does not care either whether I played good or bad or if I got a new wedge in the mail or I got a, some new golf balls. Like, doesn't affect her day.
Right. Bradford, my wife always says, she makes so much fun of me because I'll be like, well, I'm playing next week at this like unbelievable golf course, or I've got this chance to play this place. She goes, every golf course is a top five golf course to you. And I'm like, that's fair. It's a fair point.
You know what?
You're very fair point. It's a very fair point. I was like, I do use that line a lot.
You probably if you max it out at like Augusta or Pinehurst or, Pebble Beach, and then it's like after that, it's like Sawgrass, and then, not everything can be a top five. I can see that. That's fair. That's fair.
That's right.
Well, Shane, we wanted to hit you with some of our favorite GGT questions, the meat and potatoes, as we call them. What are some of your favorite golf sounds?
Oh yeah, I wrote all these down. I was so proud of myself. I did it this morning before the kids.
Oh, nice.
My favorite golf sounds. I love sprinkler turning on. I think that's really high on my list. I also like the clubs clanging around in your bag.
Yep.
When you're walking, so I find that I like to walk. I'm not one of these people that's anti carts. I feel like walkers are anti carts, and you kind of can't be both. I love riding in a cart just as much as I like walking, but I would probably prefer walking over riding, and I like the clang. So I think those are two of the ones that popped up.
Yeah, that's a sound.
That's such a good sound.
Everyone knows it, and especially when you're in a group of people, you know, it's people, you know, it's kind of clanking in different cadences as well. So no, it's the sound of golf clubs clanking in a bag definitely takes you immediately to golf. Yeah, I love that.
Where does that sound transport you?
Oh man, that's a great question. I wasn't a walker when I was a kid because I grew up on a 9-hole country club that everybody had their own cart. So we didn't walk much then. Honestly, it probably transports me. When I graduated college, I went to Scotland for a summer and caddied with a buddy of mine at St. Andrews. And we would work 5 or 6 days a week, and then we would play it 1 or 2 days. And we'd play these random places. Probably there is where it transports me, because we would literally walk through the city to go play one of the other St. Andrews courses, or we would obviously always be walking with our own clubs on those rounds. So when you asked me the question, that's where my brain went, is, you know, kind of, you know, it's like traversing St. Andrews and walking by the Dun Vegan with your clubs to go play the new, you know, at like 6 p.m. So that's kind of what I think about.
That's a great memory.
Yeah. May we have that experience in our near future, Drew. Follow-up question. GGT house favorite. What is your favorite golf smell?
This is probably a very popular one. I'm assuming most people say the cut grass smells always great. It kind of hits you in the nostrils. I mow my own grass. I'm a huge mower, been a big mower most of my life. No, that sounds weird, but I've always enjoyed it. I've always taken a lot of pride in it. I used to even have to mow. My dad had a car wash in Shreveport, Louisiana, and I would like ride or mow the back, you know, I don't know, acre or two we had behind it. Love doing that. So cut grass is high. I think cigar smoke is high as well. I like a cigar. I'll have a cigar. But even just being in the presence of one always kind of like peaks the nostrils, I'd say. So those are two on my list.
You know what time it is when you smell a fresh cigar. You're like, it transports you. Songs, music, and smells are like the two, you know, things I can be a time machine and take you back somewhere or take you to a specific location in your life. So yeah, I love that.
You know what's interesting about cigar smoke? It's brutal indoors and it's lovely out.
That is true. Yeah.
If you go to a cigar bar, it's like you walk in and you're like, oh my God, I gotta shower for like when I get home and all this. And but when you're outside, you're like, hell yeah.
It's much more appealing when you're outdoors, for sure. Absolutely. Well, I was going to say, you can escape it.
There you go. Doesn't bleed. I'll say
it's funny. My favorite golf smell is one of them is like stale beer. And one of my first jobs was working at a golf course, cleaning out the golf carts and filling them up with gas.
Yep.
And, you know, taking out all the cans of beer out of the golf cart, that instantly transports me to the golf course when I was 14 and cleaning up carts and hosing them down. And it's like, you know, if I smell like a stale beer can, I'm like, I'm at the golf course. I'm ready to golf. I'm at a golf course right now. So it's, you know, it's like, you know, cigar smoke or stale beer, they might not be great for everyone. They might not appreciate that smell, but it like you said, it transports you to, you know, exactly where you are when you smell it. So yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Calvin Klein's not bottling that
absolutely
smell, but we can be into it. You know, for
we absolutely
lot,
can.
Yes,
we can.
We can and are.
right. Be on the lookout.
This is a new question that we added for this season. But do you have an emotional support item in your golf bag?
So first of all, I love this question. I thought it was awesome. I was kind of going through the list, and this was the one I was like, damn, I wish I had thought of this question. It's a great one. I wrote about the golf bag for the Golfer's Journal last year, and how different the golf bag is depending on your skill set. And it's like, it's really a telltale sign, in my opinion. Like, really good players have their bag is buttoned up, and players that are higher handicaps, their golf bag is just a disaster. Like, my buddy will have 100 balls in there. They don't know what's in there. Like, they'll find stuff in there they didn't even know existed. My bag is a pretty buttoned up place. Of all the things I have in there, the weirdest thing I have in there is nail clippers. This was my buddy Ashton taught me this. Awesome if you're playing like a slow round of golf. You know, you can clip nails off and they can go in the grass and they're fine. My emotional support item, though, is my ball marker, which is a quarter I got. My son was born on 6/4/19, so I got a 1964 quarter to mark my ball with. This is my second one. He actually dropped the first one. The funny thing was, my first one that he had when I got, like, a couple months after he was born, I was playing with Homa during the pandemic. We play at Papago all the time. And Max and I hit these tee shots right next to each other on 10. And I marked the ball with the quarter. He actually dinged the quarter with his 3-wood when he hit the shot. So it had this little, like, ding on the quarter as well. So it actually had, like, two cool moments. It's, like, the date and this, like, time in my life where, like, Max, Ashton, and I would go play, you know, when we didn't know what the hell was going to happen with the world back in 2020. Henry actually dropped it between the floorboards, so I got another one. But that's he actually goes, he dropped it, and I was like, he could tell I was distraught about it. And he goes, well, Dad, let's just pull the boards up and we'll tape them back.
Let's do that.
And I was like, well, maybe we'll do that at some point, but maybe not right now. But I got another one. But that is it. It's my 1964 quarter. If it's not in my bag, like if I can't find it, or if I had it in my pocket, I didn't put it back in my bag, and it's upstairs and I don't have it in my bag, I get really bummed out. So I would say that's the emotional part of it.
I love that.
Yeah, like borderline panic. Like,
I couldn't find it in a round the other day, and it was like stuffed really tightly in like the corner of the valuable pouch part of the bag. I was like digging I was like ball mark tees, whatever. Yes. I got to pull out of there to find it.
I love that. That's a great story.
I've definitely been there.
I like that for the date of your kid's birth. That's cool. I might have to steal that one, Shane. All right.
So Drew said, you know, smells and music are the closest thing we have to a time machine. Shout out to Will Lowry who dropped that gem on us. So in that vein, you know, say you're about to tee off at the US Amateur, they give you a song that you get, you know, get you ready for this round. What's the song going to be?
I thought about this. I probably don't even want to tell you how long I thought about this this morning. I saw this on your email a few weeks ago, and I was just like, what is the song? And I was trying to think of just a beat, a tune that puts me in a good mood, like something that just makes me smile. And I landed on Lost One by Jay-Z. Ooh. I just feel like the start of the song, it takes me to a place that puts me in a good mood. I used to live in Denver. One of my best friends in the world lives in Vegas. I think I went like 8 or 9 times one year. Lost One is his favorite song. And so he would always play it when he picked me up at McCarran. So it was like we were young and idiots and fun and, you know, didn't have any responsibility. It's just when it comes on the phone, if we're in the car or whatever, like I smile. I immediately go back to a time in my life that you know, is hard to beat and is very, very, very separated from my life now, you know? I mean, it's like Vegas when you're 23, home when you're 39, riding with two kids. You're like, we'll listen to Lost One for about 8 seconds, then I got to change it. So, you know, it doesn't say anything that the kids don't want to hear, but that's probably the one. That's probably what I'd go with.
All right, we'll add that to the playlist. We'll share it with you after the round. It's a good.
Please do.
I'm gonna tell you, it's a good ass playlist. It's.
I can only imagine. I would like to have.
We'll absolutely send that your way. You. Yeah, it's. Please, you know, your episode. This is like our 82nd podcast that we've done. So yeah, there's 80 other bangers. Actually, no, I think we might have had doubled up a couple, but
we doubled up. Yeah.
Do you remember what the doubled up songs were?
We had.
Oh. Ambitions as a Rider by Tupac showed up more than once.
It was actually back. Ambitions of a Rider was back to back, actually, like two pods that we recorded in a row. Yeah,
it was back to back.
That was a good one. I think we've had artists double up, but I think that might be the only song
for sure.
Yeah, I think maybe we had a couple Taylor Swift, maybe a couple Tears for Fears. But yeah, we'll send that to you, and you can enjoy that. It's a great, you know, if you're gonna play music during a round, it's a great one because, you know, 80 songs that get you amped up, you know.
You know what's so? I used to be a big music guy on the golf course. This is again kind of part of getting older, and you start to realize like more that more outside of your sphere of like your existence or, you know, what you're doing in the world. I used to be like the music guy, right? I'd have the speaker, I'd be in charge of the music. I've got to a point now where I don't like doing it anymore because there's so much pressure on your music being good for the collective. Yeah. It's four people playing golf. So your music has to hit within their vibe. The rule I do now is if I'm riding in a car with somebody and I have my speaker, it's like, what do you want to listen to?
Yeah.
Like, what's your artist? Because I'm fine with anything. Like, I'll get like a tune's on. It's cool as long as it's not like Victor Hovland level metal rock or
we'll take you
something like that. Like, I'll listen to country, I'll listen to hip hop, I'll listen to whatever you want to listen to. But I don't want to have the pressure of a song coming on that nobody wants to listen to.
Yeah,
there is a lot of pressure on the music. It's thrown me almost 180 degrees the other way.
Yeah, I think that especially when you're playing with people you don't know. You know, when you're playing with your friends, you know what you can get away with and what you can't get away with. But yeah, it's like when you show up to a twosome with two other people and you don't know. It's like, and then you also everyone's played with the guy that just plays whatever, and he doesn't care about the rest of the group. And you're like, you know, this is the 17th Jimmy Buffett song I've heard today, and I could go for something different now. Yeah,
right,
yeah.
That's not fun either.
Yeah. This is just anything else. Yeah. Like, can you throw Eric Clapton on for a song? Like any other artist, I'd be down with. Right, but let's not just like jam out to your senses.
It's a tightrope that you gotta walk with that one. But you know, we're thankful that that we can play music on the course, though. You know, this is another great one. Another new addition to this season. Biggest golf fear.
I think for me, my biggest golf fear is when you've lost your game. You know, I always talk about the ebbs and flows, like the whole idea of when you have it, you feel like you're never going to lose it. When you lose it, you feel like you'll never get it back. I think it's the fear of like when you lose it. And my thing is distance. Like, I've always been a long hitter of the golf ball. I know one of these days I'm not going to be. And I think that fear of knowing that you're inevitably... Listen, you're not going to play pickup hoops for your whole life. I had to give that up a few years ago. You're not always going to be able to like bench what you used to be able to bench when you're 25. Like, I get that as well. But I think when the understanding that eventually at some point I'm going to be on the tee with three dudes younger than me and I'm going to be the shortest guy in the group is I understand it's coming. I understand it's going to happen. But I do think that in the back of the head, there's that fear of knowing that, you know, like once that happens, it's not all, I'm not all of a sudden going to find 40, you know, it's like, I'm not all of a sudden going to go 330 anymore. It's just, you know, I mean, I think it's every male deals with, you know, the inevitability of like age and death in a way. Like, I mean, that's a death of distance, right, in your brain. But I'd say that's probably my top fear. My, you know, my other fear is that my son's not going to care about golf because he doesn't right now. And I know my daughter is going to care because she cares. Like, she's 1.5 and like she puts the ball on my wedge face now and she'll take the balls out of the hole. Like, I can tell she's into it because dad's into it. My son doesn't care at all. He told me the other day, he's like, I don't want to play any sports. I'm like, like, this is why I had a son.
Don't say it.
Like, just... And I like throw him a ball and he'll catch it right away. I'm like, look at you're good. Like, you know how to do it. Like, let's lean into this a bit. Like, just pitch or I don't care, croquet, any of these things. But yeah, it's like my fear of maybe I have these two kids that like aren't going to care about golf. And it's like, all right, we'll have to wait till you're 30 and then maybe you'll care.
We've heard a lot of those stories too, though, of people that, I mean, so many of our friends that we know that are, you know, 30s and they've come back to golf. They're like, you know, grew up playing their grandparents took them to the club, or their dad or mom did, and then they, you know, hated it, and now they're 20s, 30s, 40s, and they're like, hey, maybe I should try this again. Maybe my parents were right. So hopefully that's not the case for either of us.
Right. And like, hey, right. And like, hey, can yes. you teach me how to golf, Bradford?
Because I don't remember. I
got these old clubs, and like,
I have these ping. Yeah, I've got yeah, these. I've got these ping I twos from 1997. Yep. Oh. How did these work? Are these still good? Yeah.
Right. First of all, let's trade, and yeah. second of all, I got you.
That's good. That's good. I think that's a really really healthy golf year. I think the one thing about speaking about distance, the one positive in golf is everyone's played with that 75-year-old guy that hits it 220, and it's a laser every time. I played with a guy in a match last year, and he was like 71, 72, and he never hit it further than 220 ever with any of his clubs, and he beat me because he didn't miss a fairway. He didn't miss a green. He also didn't miss any putts. He was also an amazing chipper, and I was like, right. This is amazing because, you know, I'm 35. I've got a few years before I hit 70, but if I could just hit it straight, golf is going to be, I'm still going to be good, which is kind of, it's like kind of cool to know that even though, yeah, I'm not going to rip it 300 anymore, I can still play good golf. And so if there's any consolation that golf is what you make it. So if you can keep hitting it straight, you can keep winning. I think, at least in my experience, Shane, you have, you've been playing some really good golf now these days. And then, and you win your club championship and you get a champion's dinner. What's on Shane Bacon's menu?
So I wrote this answer in two ways. So my first answer is the best Masters champion's dinner ever. And I think this is just simply like an unbelievable boss move, is when Tiger won in 97, mm-hmm. he had hamburgers and fries the next year. That is such a, I'm going to be here again yep. move.
Yes.
That, you know, it's like, I'm young. This sounds great. Let's do hamburgers and fries. This is easy, but I'll be back here in a few years. And then maybe yep. we do like ahi tuna or change it up as I age a bit. I love that. I'm sure there's like, everybody talks about the Hideki one and that's great, but another I just like one. Respected the move from Tiger in 98 doing that. For me personally, there's a place in Shreveport, Louisiana called Herbie K's, and it's this hole in the wall, dumpy spot, unbelievable food. My family's been going there for generations. They have a thing called a shrimp buster, and it's basically like pounded out flattened shrimp. They fry and they serve it with fries. Always been my champion's dinner item. It's unbelievable. Like when I go home, it's like one of the first places we go for dinner. And I mean, like my wife says, the plate's very brown.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. There's not yeah, a lot of yeah. veggies
like
on
a beige
the plate.
Meal.
It's so beige. Yeah. Like you feel like you're in the UK, but my God, it's unbelievable. And I'm like hungry now. It's like past lunchtime. I'm like thinking about it now, but that would probably be what I'd go with. Now, if this was just like a country club or a golf course and it's like, yo, what can we make you here? Mm. I'm probably just going to go club sandwich. Like I'm a big club sandwich guy. I try it everywhere I go. If they've got it on the menu, I ask if they can take the middle piece of bread out. I feel like it's rather unnecessary.
It is.
No. Don't need the three pieces of bread, but a good club sandwich is so underrated.
It's the perfect turn meal. Yeah, you're at the turn. You know, hot dogs are great. They're undefeated, but a good club. I mean, it hits the quota of veggie, meat, bread. You know, all the satiations are hit there. Yeah.
right.
I like it with potato yep. chips. Like you don't need to throw fries there. I have some Ruffles. Like we're good. It just is a throw a couple Ruffles on the sandwich if you're feeling frisky, and I feel like you're gonna be very, very happy after.
Absolutely.
That's it. All right, one last thing we'll ask you here before we let you go. We are graciously sponsored by Red Rooster, which is a glove company. They make the best golf clubs, in our opinion. Golf gloves, Lord Jesus, they don't make golf clubs yet. Red Rooster make the best golf gloves in our opinion. And we have a segment on the show called Get a Grip. And we want to give you 1 minute uninterrupted to rant about anything in golf that is grinding your gears currently.
I actually think it's something Drew touched on earlier. I think it's this idea that in golf right now, you've kind of got to pick a side. And there are many sides to be picked on. Just enjoy it. You know, if you like if you think Liv is ridiculous, that's fine. If you think Liv is awesome, that's fine. The fact that there seems to be this, you have to be on one side or the other about professional golf is so wild. And then my other thing, Bradford, is the Walker Cup, which just ended at St. Andrews. And it's one of my favorite events in the world. And the Curtis Cup, which is, you know, the women's side of that, has got to go all Europe. Like, GB and I, we did this with the Ryder Cup. We changed it. It was competitive. GB and I was leading in St. Andrews. They inevitably fell on Sunday because, you know, Sunday singles, as we see in any team event, typically is when talent rises to the top. Just make it all Europe. Let's make this more competitive. Yep. It would be more fun for everybody. It's a great event. The American side have been dominating this lately. If you look at the results, especially when it's in the United States, they are absolute blowouts. I've broadcasted a couple of these. Yeah. Tough to broadcast a blowout in match play. Just let's just go all Europe like we did with Solheim, like we did with the Ryder Cup, and let's make this event a little bit more competitive because I don't want this to be seven straight American wins on either side. I just feel like there's an opportunity to include more people and to give more players the platform in general. So those would be my two, Bradford. I think I don't know if you asked for.
No, we love. No, we're here for it.
Take as many as we can get.
We're here for it.
I got you.
Like a club sandwich.
I just want to say, yeah, bread or no bread, let's go.
Amazing, amazing. Well, Shane, we'll get you out of here. We appreciate your time. We're thankful that you're in the golf space. That we're thankful for what you do and how you continue to show up for golf and how golf shows up for you. And hopefully everyone got to experience that as well. So, yeah, just thank you, man. We appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it as well. Drew, absolutely. I have one question before we go. You wear T-shirts that are backwards. Are they inside out or are they printed backwards?
Printed backwards.
Printed backwards. Okay.
Yeah.
I was wondering about that. I like the style. I like the look. I just didn't know.
The Metalwood. That's a Metalwood shirt. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I just I always like when you rock.
It's one of my favorite
shirts.
Cool I do wear
style,
it often. Yeah,
but I didn't know if it was. Yeah, I didn't know if it was. You just wear it inside out to kind
of from the
throw a wrinkle
the big
into
brain
it,
of Cole
way,
Young
so.
From Metalwood. He did the country club flip backwards. So it's actually correctly worn inside out, but it's actually printed backwards.
Yes.
But yeah, it's
there. You go. I got my answer. Hey, great catching up with you guys, Bradford. Great to meet you. Really, really
likewise,
enjoyed the
man.
Chat. And Drew, hopefully we get to peg it at some point soon. It was a lot of fun playing with you. And
absolutely, no, I'm really thankful to when we got to play together because I feel like that really got my competitive juices going. Like, kind of my vibe is like, you know, just enjoying golf and I've come back to it. But I actually told Brad and Connor, I was like, I played this match against Shane and DJ, and it was Sam and I, and I was like, damn, like I want to play competitive golf again. And so, yeah, thank you for that. It was a great gift. I know we ended up tying, but we have to run it back out on the East Coast sometime.
Anytime we can run it back, I'm into it. We can invite Bradford, see if he can make the trip. And listen, anytime I can play any golf in Wisconsin, I am all in. Ooh. Because
I'm here whenever you need us. Let me know. I am
actually not between... all the time, Drew, because you got about a month left, and then it's probably not going to.
Yeah, that's true.
Time,
that's okay. True. So yeah, come now or maybe in May. But yeah, you know, whether it's Blue Mound, Whistling, Sand Valley, Erin, I live about 20 minutes from Erin Hills. So anytime you need a Wisconsin fix, you know where to find me and DJ as well.
Yeah, absolutely, fellas. Really appreciate the time. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Shane. See ya.